This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast. And we're back again, back with another episode with me, of course, Dave, of course. But don't fear, we have a third person, we have a guest coming up as well, talking about something that Dave is very passionate about, developer relations. What is developer relations?
So we have indeed a special guest, Matthew Revelle, joining us. Matthew and I worked together in another life many years ago and have stayed in touch over the years. And I thought it was a great topic to bring to the podcast. So in advance, thank you, Matthew, for coming to join us.
Yes, definitely. Because as usual for these interviews, it ended up being a three-episode series. Mm-hmm. And yeah, unless you have anything else.
Nothing else from me.
Let's start talking to Matthew.
Let's do it. Welcome, Matthew, to the Roaring Elephant Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So we've known each other for, let's just leave it a little while. But you're fresh and new to our audience. So do you want to introduce yourself?
So my name is Matthew Revelle, and I run a company called Hoopy, which is, we call it a marketing agency for developer tools companies. And marketing isn't always the most welcome subject in engineering circles, but that's why we specialize in marketing for what we call developer marketing, and also for the longest time developer relations, because it is a specialized thing. So that's what I do.
Awesome. So I mean, you touched on one of the key words that we wanted to sort of chat about a little bit, which was developer relations. Sometimes, you know, people talk about developer relations, sometimes people talk about developer advocacy, some shortened to DevRel, DevAdv. Like, is there a difference between these two? Are these the same discipline? Is it like a weird overlapping Venn diagram, or what's the story there?
There are a lot of Venn diagrams, and some overlap and some don't. And that's one of the challenges that people in developer relations have, is that I think the term developer relations probably came to the fore about 10 years ago. But really, it's been something, if you go back to the open source world, it's something that's been going on since the 80s. But as a discipline, as a profession, it's something where there's a lot of vagueness to it. And I'm sorry not to give a straightforward answer, but the reason for this is that developer relations is something that is defined by its audience. Whereas marketing will work with different audiences, but there's a core set of skills, disciplines, and outcomes. Whereas developer relations can vary quite a lot from one company to another. And there's a reason for that. And that's because the initiating strategic problem that led to the founding of a developer relations function varies so much from one company to another. So for example, one of the canonical DevRel kind of companies, Twilio, they had developer relations. They didn't call it that. They called it technical evangelism. And then later, I think, developer evangelism. And they also called it the developer network, I think. But one of the reasons that they had that function in the company was to build awareness and adoption for their communications APIs, in lieu of having, at the beginning, a traditional marketing function. Now, that means that they did a certain type of activities that we would now call developer relations. But if you are an open source company primarily, and you have, perhaps you have a paid version on top of a community developed project, then it might be that actually your focus is more on building a contributor community around that source project and making sure that that is well fed and looked after and nurtured. And they both would fall under developer relations to some extent, but they're quite different things. So, like I say, sorry not to give a straightforward answer, but developer relations varies a lot. what unifies it is this idea of essentially doing vaguely marketing, vaguely product, and somewhat engineering things to make sure that developers will engage with your product or project in a way that is mutually beneficial. That would be the shorter way of saying it.
Nice. Okay. So when we're talking about DevRel, and you mentioned a few things there. You mentioned one is like what's the founding problem that led to DevRel being started somewhere, as being that often decides the initial trajectory of what that DevRel org is both responsible for and is aiming to solve. But what, and you mentioned kind of open source companies, maybe it's more about creating that adoption, creating that contribution sort of community. But what are some of the other common patterns that you see, both the common problems that people are trying to solve that initiates DevRel, and what are some of the common kind of roles that DevRel end up kind of doing in organizations?
Okay, well, so there are three or four. A friend of mine, Ben Greenberg, calls them origin stories for developer relationship teams. And often, so in the majority of what we would call DevRel, it's all about adoption, well, building awareness, adoption, and then ongoing usage of a particular product. And so that might be a set of public APIs, it could be AWS. And that's very much focused around, okay, we need to communicate to developers the value of our product, and there's a particular way you would do that, but also we need to understand their needs and act as a bridge between the company and the developer customer base or audience. And I'm not going to call them a community, because communities are very specific things, and we use community too easily in this field. So that would be kind of number one. Probably 70-80% of DevRel programs are about awareness, adoption, and then long-term success, developer success. So that's that. But then the others are, I want to build a community of people who are well practiced in my product, so that when big enterprisey bank over here buys my product, they can easily hire a team of either freelancers or whoever to come and enable that product for them. And so, at Hoopy, we worked with a client for a while who had exactly that problem. Theirs was a closed low-code platform that tended to get used by local government, banks, things like that. And the issue for them, for their clients, was that once they'd signed the deal, they struggled to hire people who were proficient to be able to actually create on that low-code platform. Yeah. And so what we did with them was help them build a developer enablement community and program that then help to solve that problem. So that's another thing. Is there an ecosystem of people out there who want to work with this product and will be proficient when the time comes? Then a similar ecosystem thing is about building partnerships. So I'm doing a lot of personal just kind of playing around with an open source headless CMS called Directus at the moment. And a friend of mine heads up DevRel there, and one of the things that he wants to do is build up an ecosystem of plugin and extension creators for that platform. So you've got awareness and adoption, ecosystem as in people who can use, developers who can work with it, and then ecosystem as in partnerships. Then you've got the contributor community, which is quite distinct in many ways. From the others, because the motion that you go through is quite different. And then the last one is really about more of a marketing kind of I'm really sorry. If this was live, I wouldn't even stop and start like this. The last one is about creating a community of force multipliers. So, you know, we've all heard of champions programs or MVP programs. Some DevRel programs are initiated because they, as a company, don't have the reach or the resources or the skills to do everything that they want to in terms of developer marketing or creating the product. And so they create a program of, as I say, force multipliers, but essentially a DevRel program that is all about enabling people within the developer community to find a mutually beneficial way to contribute back to that product. That is different to an open source contributor community, because in an open source contributor community, things are very much less controlled, I would say, whereas this is more about incentivizing people to do the specific things you want them to do. So that's kind of, those are the archetypal reasons why people or companies tend to found DevRel programs.
Yeah, okay. So I was going to ask, like, what's the difference between an open source based organization and a more proprietary or closed organization? But I think from the way that you've described it, like, those archetypes generally bucket a little bit differently between one and the other. Like, is there any other sort of differences that you usually see?
Well, between open source and closed source, certainly it's not as clear cut as that. So, for example, you've got Redis is in the news as we record for a recent rebrand, and also for changing their license, as many people have, like Elastic and others. Now, when you are running the DevRel program for a company like that, so you have this open source product underneath what you do, or open source project, I should say, you are not the similar, you're more similar to someone who has an entirely proprietary API, public API that they're selling, because really between the two of you, your focus is on the commercial activity that you can do on top of that open source layer. So I think, though, if you have a company that is open source in that perhaps they founded or are a very strong sponsor of an open source project, and that is a large part of what they do, you know, it's not just that they're selling support or a commercial version on top of it, but actually a large part of the company's being is about the nurture of that open source project. Then there is very much a kind of a cultural difference. So I worked at Canonical for 6 years, many years ago. And, you know, the community team there was all about enabling the Ubuntu community to thrive. It wasn't about creating some way of seeking commercial value from the community. It was purely about the open source community and making it function well. And obviously there's a commercial benefit to Canonical, the company, there, but you know, the aim wasn't commercial for the team's charter. So the difference there is that you are really focused on what's good for the community, whereas in a more commercially focused DevRel program, even if there's an underlying open source thing, then the cultural difference is one of actually, no, we value and respect the open source community that we rely on, but our job here is to not to get contributions to the community, but still to build that developer user audience rather than the developer contributor audience.
Got it. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that sort of things like developer relations, DevRel, can often be seen as kind of like marketing for the in a special way for specifically for product slash engineering. But you know, what are the core parts of the organization that, you know, a DevRel team or a DevRel individual would kind of spend most of their time interacting with? Is it, you know, mainly the engineering teams? Is it a lot of time with the marketing teams? Is there other connections that people spend a lot of time with?
Well, it varies, which is unfortunately going to be the answer to a lot of developer relations. The typical DevRel team will be somewhat. So let's say right now, I would say that most DevRel teams are either a part of the marketing function or at least have a dotted line into it. When I first started out, DevRel teams, not that they were called that, were either their own thing or they were in engineering. So when I worked at Couchbase 10 years ago, we were part of, you know, we reported into the CTO, VP of engineering. Nowadays, it tends to be that they're part of the marketing team, and they will have, depending on their charter, they will probably spend a lot of time working with either the SDK team, if that's not part of DevRel, or the engineering team generally. They'll be very engaged with product. If documentation isn't part of the DevRel remit, then they'll work with the technical writing team a lot. So they're very much kind of a, DevRel teams tend to be connectors, both within the company and outside of the company in. So it's hard to say that there's a typical kind of structure, but yeah, mostly these days you will have DevRel teams reporting into a CMO. Some, you know, there's a good chunk that are reporting into product. Bizarrely, there's a tiny number that report into sales, and then there'll still be some who are reporting into engineering. There's a handful of companies who have a dedicated, you know, C-suite person who is chief community officer or chief developer officer. But really, that tends to be, I would say these days, much more the exception. It's very rare, I would say.
Okay.
And there's a good reason for that. And that's because DevRel is marketing. And there are lots and lots of people who will argue against that. But I think that comes from, you know, I respect people's differences of opinion, but a lot of the time when people say that DevRel is not marketing, it's because they misunderstand what marketing is.
Okay. We'll come back to that later.
I also sometimes see DevRel being abused for educational purposes.
Right. So, yeah, this is one of the interesting things. 10, 15 years ago, you would have technical evangelists transforming into a job title of developer advocate who were required to be all-rounders. And there was this silly idea that you had to have this unicorn status of someone who could write brilliantly, who could present, was happy to spend half their life on a plane, and also was an excellent developer, and you know, could create, could tell you all about the semantic wave and other forms of pedagogical theory, and so we're an excellent developer educator as well. And those people exist, but they are vanishingly rare. So what's part of the maturing of developer relations over the past, I'd say this has come about over the past 5 years, you know, the pandemic really had something of a forcing function here. But DevRel has become increasingly specialized. And so the generalist developer advocate is still something that smaller companies hire for sure. But you will have, you know, like GitHub, their developer relations team and developer education teams are separate. I just want to make sure that I'm not going to say the wrong thing, but I think VP of DevRel at GitHub, Martin Woodward, I think developer education falls under his remit now, but the DevRel and developer education teams are very much separate and have their own charter and agenda. So yes, developer education was a major theme of DevRelCon London 2023. And it's very much a thing in its own right, I would say. So there's certainly, you know, there are levels of competence within developer relations. If you are a small company and you just need to get some docs out there, you need a few tutorials, you're not really doing, you're not perhaps going to think of that as developer education specifically. But if you are a much bigger company who has the resources and the skills to put together more, I don't want to say thoughtful, because that's not the word, but strategic developer education programs, then certainly that is definitely a thing now. And this is really interesting because, you know, for years we've been kind of talking about what are the four pillars of DevRel. And really they're kind of interchangeable and they change with what's happening in the market. But developer education is certainly one of them. But sometimes people might call it developer enablement, and then including that, you know, library development or sample app development. And so it's one of the core parts of DevRel, but it's, you know, this is one of the reasons why we go around in circles so much talking about developer relations, is because, you know, it changes from one company to another. So yeah, developer education is definitely important, but not everyone has the budget to really double down on it.
And there we go with our first section of our DevRel dev advocacy journey with Matthew. Once again, thank you, Matthew. Really appreciate you spending time with us, educating us, and maybe even educating our audience.
Yep, and a little apology for the sometimes bad connection towards Matthew. He was actually on a Starlink satellite connection, and as we have proven today, UTP cables, still a better thing.
Yeah, hardwired, still the best option if you can. But it is also probably pretty amazing how far satellite internet has come over the last time. Because
the fact that it works is amazing.
Exactly. Exactly right. Well, that's the end of part one. Anything else from you, Jan?
Nope.
In that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, comment, do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. And of course, please send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. We read every single email, even if we may not respond to all of them. Until next time, my name is Low Latency Here, Dave.
And my name is, I never thought I'd be on a developer matching site kind of thing. Yum.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.